Thank you very much. I must express the fact that I am a bit more nervous tonight than I am ordinarily, having matriculated here one time, mostly tricky-lated, probably more trick than lated. Last time I was in here, taking one of those major biology exams. Guess they don't do that now. With a body full of tattoos, little lightweight answers. That were not on that set of exams. I see some old familiar faces down here who were stealing exams. I don't do that anymore because I don't take exams anymore. This is a rather strange scene to me, and I really hate to, you know, get in the kind of reminiscing bag, but offers lots of memories as I think about what I thought I knew in 1959 as a freshman here. Amongst other things, I was just coming from South Carolina, and I was coming up north to Champaign. Operating under a lot of limitations and restrictions in the Palmetto State, which was understandable. But being up here in the land of Lincoln, pretty little orange and blue signs everywhere to remind you of it too. I just got all psyched out. And a lot of strange little things happened to me at that time to begin to shake me into a sense of maturity, trying to see what it was all about. Things like one night at Huff's Gymnasium, the Panhellenic Council, which black fraternities couldn't be a part of at that time, 59, they were having their big dance for the year. They had Lyle Hampton and that whole bit at the gym. One or two of us slipped in the door to see Lyle Hampton, just like South Carolina. Slipping in the dough. That was on a Friday night. Then on Saturday night, we had our little gathering at Prince. Went on over to the VFW club above the garage. Y'all remember that? While they were dancing to big orchestras, we were over there playing Shop Around, spinning 45s. That was a strange feeling for a college student, up north and free, and operating as a big trained animal on the football field. It was a strange scene. And then to go into Champaign and to get some frigidity that was a little colder, or a little more frigid, then South Carolina, and found myself weaving through the free downtown, which I thought was going to be in contrast to South Carolina, only to find it more rigid as I made my way on over to Po' Boys. Y'all know I've been to Champaign, don't you? And then as things began to kind of move on the weekends when the whites would be having their social breaks from the stress and strain of the universitas, how we would be trapped over at the canteen near Greg Hall, playing whist and wishing we was home. And a certain psychic strength kind of kept us going. And that was, we had been convinced that no sacrifice was too great because we were special blacks. We weren't ordinary. We were in the Big Ten. We were the cream of the crop of the nation's colored youth. Strange things happened that year. Took my first speech course at Lincoln Hall. Funny old teacher. Don't want to call that dude's name. He may be in the audience. Anyhow, at the end of the semester, the class was to select those participants who were to get in the Houston Memorial Speech Contest. It's kind of off limits for blacks, but nonetheless, out of pity or excitement or something, the class elected me to represent the class. He decided against it. So he sent somebody else to represent the class, and they got sick. That's how I ended up going. And after going, out of about 30 different classes, I won the first round. And I shall never forget, they were using an 8-point grading system, and they were kind of tight. And I think I came in 7.17 from one judge, 7.34 from another judge, and 3.17 from another. We were anxious to study the difference, and that judge has Negro dialect. And so when that we experience now in terms of the black resistance on the campus and the campuses, and the search for identity and the identity crisis and the black groupings and the ethnic chauvinism, it grows out of a very real history that has its roots in traditions at universities such as these that are much deeper than it even appears to those of you who've been here for 3 or 4 years. It's been here a long time. Something strange during those days, when it was still fresh in everybody's mind that perhaps the greatest football player in the history of the university here was J.C. Caroline. Had broken a number of Red Grange's records. Had the university kind of moving in an uproar. Brought a lot of fame to the institution. And to see him coming through the campus on the back of a pickup truck with a fork, picking up paper on campus during the off-season while he played for the Bears, and to watch men such as, that time, Buckus had not arrived, but Ray Nischke and that bunch was coming out of Green Bay. But they were coming back not on the back of trucks. They were coming back with suits and ties on, operating out of the athletic department, going across the state and across the nation, wooing other white athletes to come to the university. So they were operating with shirt and tie and endorsing products in the Champaign-Urbana downstate Illinois area. And yet somehow there was supposed to be, once you got on the football field, leave your feelings in the locker room. Because we play make-believe for an hour. Funny little things, like black quarterback named Mel Myers. Started as a sophomore because Johnny Easterbrook got hurt. Johnny Easterbrook was the best quarterback in the Big Ten, pound for pound. That's what the Illinois literature said. He weighed 120 and was from Champaign. weighed 120 and was from Champaign, and his parents owned Easter's concession stands over at Memorial Stadium and cleaned all of the athletic wares. And so he was the best in the Big Ten, pound for pound. Mel was the best quarterback in the Big Ten until Johnny got well. I could talk forever about some of these experiences because they really run deep. But I guess the beauty of it all was that by leaving here, among other reasons because I was not allowed to play quarterback, because that was a bit off limits. As soon as a few people got well, even Mel couldn't play it either. Finally got shipped away from here. I went back to North Carolina A&T State University, which is an all-black Southern college. And I guess there's some sense of balance needed between the ethos and the sense of ethnic development at the black university and the sense of academic advantage that the university has. Somewhere between that socializing process there, which is not unacademic, and between the academic process here, which is not all antisocial, somewhere between those two, one is apt to get a pretty sound education. One is apt to be able to look at the Big Ten University without being jealous of it or contemptuous, and yet seeing it for what it is worth and for what it is not worth. But I guess perhaps the point that is even colder is that when you pay those race dues and go back to Chicago with a degree on the wall from the University of Illinois, you may meet someone from an unnamed, unaccredited Southern college that you're teaching next door to, making the same amount of money, because race has restricted you by definition, in spite of achievement. And that's where the rub comes. Because some of the same white boys that peeped over my shoulder to get their passing grades here want me to ease gently into their offices now to be able to beg a donation to keep a black movement going. And we simply refuse to do it. It has something to do with opportunity, not with ability. Does say to those of us here that for all of our pain and suffering, ain't nobody gonna give us nothing. As tough as it is, you can't teach what you don't know and you can't lead where you don't go. The most dangerous thing that a slave can have is a developed mind, and once he develops his mind, he won't be a slave anymore. And that is why, along with the development and the accentuation of the beauty of black motor skills, there are some cognitive skills that we got to deal with. Because even though the Olympic judge is lauded at our motor skills, if our elementary and secondary schools are first class, our brains could provide just as many thrills, because our brains are in proportion to the bodies that win the gold medals. But our legs have a greater opportunity to develop than our minds do. And every once in a while, when some of us break through with our minds, there are deceptive ways of cutting us off, like sending us messages through our veins rather than through our brains. That's a war using opiate as the arsenal. Some others of us get caught pickling our brains in liquor like peaches, clouding our minds with smoke, not understanding that slavery is not so bad when it is without. It is really bad when it is within. It is not bad to be in the slum. You may not could help that. But it is bad when the slum gets in you and you begin to internalize it. All of us can say that we are in or have been in the slum, but we are not of it. And because our minds are developed, our character is in conflict with that slum. And as long as tension exists, eventually the minds will tear down the buildings. If the mind is developed, I looked at the flyer. Talks about a rather sophisticated topic for this series. Political economy. Political economy. It's really a whole new concept, political economy. A few years ago, we talked about politics. We talked about economics. Now we talk about political economy. It means that those two institutions have married in this society. They are Siamese twins now. It means that all aspects of the economy, what used to be known as private is now public, and what used to be known as public is still public, and since all matters of public are subject to politics, then the political order controls the economy, so they don't control the protest on this campus by sending in police. They control it by tightening up on the budget. And those whose grades went down, who engaged in protest, just don't fit anymore. And that becomes a more sophisticated way of controlling the conduct on the college campus. There was a mild retreat on the part of whites from blacks 3 or 4 years ago. As many were able to kind of shove themselves forward, the pendulum has swung back now. And those that used to ease through, getting eased for ethnicity, pendulum has swung to the right now. Go back home there and talk about the days you were downstate. That's over. And in one real sense, perhaps it should have been over all the while, because if you come back home, the teacher don't have any information, they're just going to send you to the ghetto to spread ignorance. If you come back home and can't lawyer, they're just going to send you to the black court to leave us defenseless in the face of you. So to that extent, one owes it to the revolution to develop his mind. Political economy. In August of last year, August 15th, the president issued an order given by the Republicans, sanctioned by the Democrats. Freeze the wages, release the prices. No real protests, a few bluffs by labor here and there, but no real protests. What had happened as a result of that decision is that we had officially moved to a political economy where the political order and the executive branch of that political order could in fact control the economy by doing what? Subsidizing Lockheed up top, subsidizing Penn Central up top, declaring a war without the sanction of the Congress, feeding the poor at the bottom of the economy, so poor people and business people, the little and the big, the needy and the greedy, have to come to the political center to get decisions made, even for the economy. That is a political economy. And so in some sense, old definitions like capitalism and socialism, they ain't even highly relevant no more. It's a new thing going down. Some new manifestos will have to be written if we're not to get trapped in yesterday's jargon. When Mayo and Nixon can sit down in a basement, talk English and yin-yang for an hour. And emerge, one leaving talking left rhetoric, one leave talking right rhetoric, to appeal their masses. That is a communique. That is a synthesis. That is neither the thesis nor the antithesis. That is a new thing where survival is more basic than rhetoric.
And it really says to us, brothers and sisters, that if Nixon and Mayo can see survival as more basic than rhetoric, if the art communists and the art capitalists can work out an agreement for survival, then those of us who can't sit in the same room talking about what we believe, we out of date. Black nationalist, black Methodist, black Muslim, black capitalist, black whatever, the numerators may be your favorite adjective, but the common denominator is your condition, not your position. Your condition is your common denominator. Understand that. Political economy. Most university campuses that we visit now, interestingly enough, not even academic to talk about that kind of thing anymore. Many of them, I must congratulate you, are trapped in things a bit more superficial than arguing about something like the political economy. To see people like Bill Clay coming here is kind of exciting to me, and the other person that you've had in the series. In the nation now, there are slightly over 200 million people. The most overproductive economy in the history of the world, 40 million are malnourished, 28 million are white. 14 million rural poor, starving, 11 million are white. Of that 40 million, 30 million live in a household where somebody works every day. They just make such little money until they steal or below the poverty line. Has nothing to do with being lazy. Poor people work the hardest and the longest on the nastiest of jobs, performing the most menial of chores, but they still are poor. Not because they're lazy, but there's no relationship between their labor and their power. And power gets privilege. Salary comes from power, not just labor. Salary comes from power and privilege, not just labor. A political economy. What is significant to me as we observe what all is happening? Is that in the face of confrontation, most people would rather switch than fight. Even though they talk about fight than switch, they would rather switch. See, in the old days, white people who didn't want to take credit for the slavery going down, they'd be talking about, it ain't us, it's the people that got some. They live off of all the prerogatives, but they would escape responsibility. Black folk, what we'll do, we'll say, well, don't worry about it, because by and by, when the morning comes, over yonder, it'll be all right. Tell somebody to close that door. What? They out there, man? Sure enough, Hulk, they must don't like what I'm talking about. Be giggling, close that door. Shit. That was cold as the air. Y'all say amen.
Amen.
Get back in my groove. Talking about escaping. Rather than confront the issue, they say we're not going to fight that which is, because beyond this life, there's a better life. An argument came about like that when the Hebrews were in a little oppression in New Testament days. And one man said to another, how can you love God whom you have not seen if you don't love your neighbor next door? He says, furthermore, that you can establish your love for God by loving your neighbor as you love yourself. He brought the man to self, neighbor, then God. That's where the argument ended up. He was challenging him, escaping, dealing with Rome. Because Rome constituted the reality and the parameters of reality of their lives. Just like America does our lives. Now some of us, we done stop escaping heaven. We said we don't like theology no more. So we done jump from theology and jump to anthropology. We ain't worried about these problems because beyond the Atlantic, over in Africa, where we came from, there's a lot of peace and freedom and non-conflict. Unreal. Biggest continent on earth divided into 42 nations. In much conflict. Can use your color and can perhaps use your skill if you can be trusted. It is very difficult to love the brother over yonder whom you have not seen, whose language you do not understand, and whose dialect you cannot speak if you cannot relate to the brother in the dormitory. Don't escape the parameters of your situation trying to run. Ain't no hiding place. Ain't nobody giving up nothing nowhere. It's cold, but ignorance finds its way on the bottom of all systems. Ignorant Cubans on the bottom of Castro's system. Ignorant Chinese on the bottom of Mayo's system. Reverend, why do you come this way? I come this way because we use our motor capacity in our anger to run the man out the ghetto. But now if you do not come home with a developed mind, we cannot run you in. The absence of the man is not the same as the presence of us. I'll back up on that. The absence of the man is not the same as the presence of us. Don't get trapped taking over no airplane and have to beg somebody else to fly it for you. That's what I'm talking about. System we're in is rotten. That's a given. We need another system. That's a given. But it's going to take more than recognizing that to change it. I was down home on Green Avenue, heard about two bombs on the side of the railroad track. I mean, talk is a powerful thing, particularly when you believe it. One bomb said another bomb, believe I buy this railroad track. Other bomb, after 5 minutes of contemplation, looked down both ways, said, I don't believe I want to sell it. Haven't gotten their rhetorical orgasm, they walked on down the tracks. One dude jump up, believe it or lack this system. Another dude say, believe I ain't gonna cooperate with it. Fuck it, let's go to the cafeteria. I am suggesting that you do not deceive yourself and think that just taking a rhetorical leap relieves you of any responsibility for your existential dilemma. That is what I am suggesting. We can agree that the system is in bad shape, it is inadequate, and it is on a collision course, and it is going to clash. System is just like a car going over the cliff. And we know it's on a collision course, don't we? That's why the man went to China, because the system is in trouble. And that's why he's going to Moscow, because it's in trouble. But the tough thing about it is that if it goes over the cliff, they ain't going to push no button and release us because we're in the trunk. Some people think it's because we're sitting in the trunk on a red, black, and green pillar that this mean old monster gonna push a button and let us out. So we're gonna stay back there in the back and tend our own self's business while it goes over the cliff. Then the young whites, they escape another way. Young whites, they're sitting up in the front seat of the system, right next to the daddy. And they all embarrassed because don't nobody like the daddy nowhere. Don't nobody trust American white people nowhere. They go to France, Charles de Gaulle and them, all of them just be looking, they don't like them. They go to Africa, look at them as colonized. They, American white men ain't like nowhere. Everywhere they go, they got to take guns to protect themselves because everybody suspect them. You know, they've abused a lot of people. And so a lot of young whites understand that, and they're ashamed of their parents because their parents been so ruthless. And so they really don't like them. So what they do is rather than admit that their dad is wrong and try to deal with him, they try to get high and look out the window. And they go through all kinds of little funny things, what I call little personal revolutions. If the daddy say wear a suit and tie, they wear an army jacket. If the daddy say be clean, they try to dress nasty and look poor. If the daddy say be clean shaven, they grow a beard. If daddy say take a bath, they won't take one. Going through a little personal revolution, the daddy say be sober, be the all-American boy, they start chewing grass and going on. Just all kind of little old petty fights. Say amen.
Amen.
You know, if what's interesting, though, the reason I can't get, you know, caught following young white leadership is because they don't ever get mad enough to get out the wheel. They always want to sober up in time to inherit what the old man done stole. Now, what I am suggesting as we look at, you know, at the Shirley Chisholms and the McGoverns and people who are moving with a sense of soberness, is that reality, you know, reality is a hell of a thing because it binds you. You know, reality be talking about ears or ain't, or shade in between. Don't be talking about on the other side of ears or the other side of ain't, just ears or ain't. Reality kind of limits you. You either can fly or you can't. You either can walk or you can't. I mean, reality, you know, you're going to jump up gravity, come on, get out. You know, you decide you want to kick a hole, earth be talking about I'm here to stay. I mean, reality kind of got us in a box, so there ain't but so many things you can do, you know, in your state of finitude. So what that means, young people, is that either we in the trunk, you in the front seat, either we seize the levers of power and take over, or we, in the face of it, escape power and just have a seizure and be the consequences of not having organized to take over. Just cause you're embarrassed at your daddy, and just cause I don't dig him, apparently will not make him relinquish the power. And in Newark, they shifted from escape, baby, escape, and burn, baby, burn, to learn, baby, learn. They left Central Ward, or south, or west, or near the north side, and they took over downtown because they cleared up their minds and organized. Finally concluded there wasn't nobody going to give them nothing. That's cold, but it's real. It's so cold until if you leave here having been whipped to death by some low-life, immoral teacher. Once you hit the streets of Chicago, you get no pity. It's so cold that when you get that, even with a degree, if you don't have some information, ain't nobody going to listen to you. It's just that cold. It's so cold, ain't nobody going to ask you where you come from or even where you're going. They're going to ask you what you got and what do you know and what have you done for me lately. You know, it's cold. And so I'm suggesting that beyond analyzing the political economy and using little philosophical quips to escape a fight, let us look briefly at what has happened to us. 1954, we arrived at a legal base that we had fought for 59 years. This is black history, not just reading by some black characters. From 1895 to 1954, we fought for a legal foundation. NAA led that fight. From 1955 to 1964, we fought to regain our public accommodations. 1965, we shifted from civil rights to civil power. We stopped asking the man to protect us and began to get an office so we could protect ourselves. We went to Selma with 3 black congressmen, now we got 13. We went to Selma with no black mayors, now we got 84. We went there with 400 black elected officials, now we got 2,100. Civil power struck. Now, push argues we are in an even newer day. We got our civil rights, we're getting our civil power. So we got the right to go to any school in America, but we can't pay the tuition. We got the right to move in any neighborhood in America, but we can't pay the notes. Got the right to buy any car in America and do buy it, but we can't stop it from being repossessed. That suggests that we are now in the civil economics era, the political economic era. When you are in political and economic domination and you revolt from colonialism, you go into neo-colonialism. That's where you got the political office but don't have the economic power. After you get past neo-colonialism, you fight to break the economic shackles. Then you talk about independence. Now we have gotten some political officers, but they have no economy to officiate over. They have no economy to officiate over. That's why it's a fallacy talking about the ghetto as our neighborhood. We don't own 47th Street East or West. Ain't no our. Ain't no our. We occupy a little turf where that are economic advantages for the colonizer. For in Chicago, when Ron raised the open housing question, don't get to arguing about integration. Don't get that light. Because that was a time black folk couldn't move past Cottage Grove in Chicago. Then there was another time they couldn't get past State Street. Then they couldn't get past Halston. Now Father Lawless is trying to stop them getting past Ashland. But you need to understand that each one of those blocks were major fights by some unknown blacks. But the other question is, was it just racism that held us back? Was it just racism? It was the political economy. Because it was the real estate board that understands that if one-third of the city, about 35%, is hemmed in on 12 to 15% of the land, that the laws of supply and demand inflates the whole area. So even slum property in the ghetto goes up, not because the land is worth more, but you got more people competing for the land. If you're going to talk about political economy and not just deal with racism, you must move beyond just arguing moral, immoral, good, bad. You've got to talk about black future, not just black history. You got to deal with profit, loss, asset, liability, long-term, short-term, debentures, floating stock, World Bank. Control that economy. What does it matter if you buy a building and have to beg your enemy to manage it for you because you've not dealt in the science of real estate? This is a very sophisticated topic y'all suggested tonight. Inheriting is a great challenge. If you're serious about it and coming out of Chicago, God knows I know you need it to deal with the political economy. One talks about politics in Chicago, you're talking about the school board. a board of education that has a $750 million a year budget. $750 million a year as a budget is a big enough institution around which to build a satellite city. Who sells the milk to that school system? The orange juice, the sausage, the books, the bread, the desk. Why is there always a labor chief head of the Board of Education? Who controls the maintenance? Who controls the $14 an hour just for looking at pumps downstairs? Who controls the $8 an hour for replacing windows? The economics of the matter. It ain't just what you learn in that classroom, because the teacher's not making the money that the janitor is making. The plumber is making $19,000 a year, the teacher making $11,000. The economics of the matter. The political economy. Say this in our clothes, brothers and sisters, that you need a sense of history. And I guess you need to know, in spite of how difficult it's going to be ahead, that black people are making progress. 1964, we were out of the political ballpark. We heard them cheering on the inside. 1968, we were in the ballpark, but we were in the bleachers, because it was the first time that the masses of black people had ever come to a political convention. We just got enfranchised in 1965. But now it's 1972. You're talking about a black candidate running, talking about a national black political convention. What does all this mean? It means that we're in the ballpark and down on the field organizing positions of power. And once you really get into politics, you find out that it's not even black-white, but it's many shades of black and many shades of white based on self-interest. Based on self-interest. It's a whole new ball game. And so you can't even study the science of politics in the abstract. Just memorizing a few verses in the Illinois Constitution ain't got nothing to do with political science. Hope ain't none of y'all being deceived. Thank you, no political scientists. Because if you can't come back home and organize your block and count them votes, you are not a political scientist. The political scientists in Chicago are in the second ward, not in the university. That's where the political scientists are. Dudes that keep on producing them pluralities, those are the political scientists in that man's town and right across this nation. Say this in our close, brothers and sisters, those of you who are here in the university are in the vanguard of the mind development movement. The reason why it is important to those of us on the outside, those of you on the inside, take over that movement, is because we are supposed to have 634 radio stations, and we got six. Even if some people with money buy them, you got to be able to run them. That's the science of communication. We cannot build a 25-story building from ground up in any city in America. So even if we stop the construction with a picket sign, unless you deal with civil and construction engineering, we cannot run it up. We are doctors short. And yet black sick people with sickle cell don't need sick doctors whose minds ain't developed. It also suggests that we need to get up off each other's back. Little funny little terms like some of us colored, some Negro, some black, some super black, some super nigger. Too late for all that. Too late for all that. Our problem is not where black doctors live. Our problem is ain't enough black doctors living. Our problem is not where black lawyers live. There ain't enough of them living. Even a revolution has to be scientific. It's significant to me. All of them went through the stages of research, studying themselves and their enemy. Education, of the troops and the masses and the inaction. Because you can't teach what you don't know, and you can't lead where you don't go. And if you get trapped running the man out of power, if you can't take over, then the counter-revolution wipes you out. That's why it's dangerous to break the status quo unless you can usher in a newer and a better day. That is a supreme challenge. And so I guess that's why Dr. Du Bois was your hero. He had a PhD, sociology and economics. If Malcolm was your hero in part one of the book, he was a brother on the corner and a pimp and a hustler. But in part two, he turned the jail cell into a classroom and read the great books, including Spinoza, the Bible, and the Quran. He developed his mind. Dr. King was a hero, PhD. Che Guevara, MD. Castro, PhD and a lawyer, 22. Nkrumah, BS from Lincoln. Bachelor of Theology from Lincoln. Master of Science from the University of Pennsylvania. Only his writing away from his PhD at Columbia. Two masters in economics from the London School of Economics. Imam Muammar Baraka, known to some as Leroy Jones, BS from Howard University. Graduate School, Columbia School of Journalism, New School of Social Work, and Rutgers University. Ho Chi Minh, PhD. Mao Zedong, 3 PhDs, speaks 9 languages and about 12 dialects. It suggests that if we are to overcome the enemy, that our minds must surpass his, because when the mind of the slave surpasses that of the slave master, he has the ability to put him in the box. Big men with little minds are controlled by little men with big minds. I challenge you to come back home when you develop your mind, because our sick people need some doctors. There are some diseases, one known as sickle cell, that ain't nobody interested in dealing with because it's basically black and it's hereditary. And ain't nobody gonna rid us of that disease but us. But it means you got to deal with the lab. We got to take over and we got to take charge. We got to deal with it. We can not only deal in quantitative politics, we got to deal in qualitative politics. We got to understand, given our situation, we cannot be the majority in either party. Therefore, we must become the minority in both, dealing with issues, not with parties. Understand that we should have no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests, dealing not with partisanship or persons, but with propositions. What is the black agenda? What is it that we need? Money, jobs, income, health. Since we can't go to Africa far, and we can't go to heaven far, and we can't wait until we're dead to get it, it suggests, as my mind runs back to being in Africa this time a year ago, and I'm glad that we're growing up as we relate to our mother country. I've dealt with this whole question of identity since I've left here, dealt with it long and hard. Dealt with motherhood as we look at Mother Nature. There's democracy and birth. All of us come that way. And I've dealt with fatherhood. Father time takes all of us out. There's democracy and death. And I've dealt with the conflict at the level of brotherhood, the level where we make decisions between motherhood and fatherhood. I've gone a step further as I relate to our beautiful homeland. All of us, no matter what the complexion of our skin is, we have African roots. And yet we are American fruits, trained by European brutes. It makes us strange fruit. It's a funny identity. I'm glad that we are growing up, and I'm glad they're growing up. We don't see them just as wild natives anymore. And they don't see us just as Mantan Moland anymore. Both of us were given extraordinarily bad images of each other. But we're growing up now. But I say to you, Africa would. Talking about help now. Africa would if Africa could. America could if America would. Africa can't and America ain't. We got to stand up.
Okay, we're running a little bit late, therefore the question and answer period will be cut kind of short. There's another group that's supposed to have the auditorium, so there will be two or three questions, and that's it. Remember, the reception will be at ISR, the multipurpose room.
See some of these Chicago people? All y'all from Daly's Plantation, holler. Love y'all's daddy, don't you? Old Kim, Dan. The choir getting it good. They asked how his operation pushes people's choir. They still doing much singing. We're going to have a family affair at the McCormick Place Friday night. Expect to have about 10,000 people there. It's going to be a rather major affair. And we're still taking care of business as best we can. Question? Y'all could ask them old folksy questions. They ask now, supporting Sister Shirley, yes. Are you registered? Then you can help. Right on. Now don't y'all mess around and get so mad to help somebody that you ain't registered. See, because 100,000 unregistered voters are more dangerous than 100,000 dead people. At least 100,000 dead people don't get in nobody's way and don't cost nothing. But 100,000 unregistered voters is real dead weight and just get in people's way. They don't need a fighting if you don't get in the ring. What's that, sister? Oh, you want... Well, look here. I thought y'all were scared to do that down here. I am. Somebody.
Somebody.
I am. Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be poor, but I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be on welfare,
but I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be unskilled,
but I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I am.
Black.
Beautiful.
Proud.
I must be respected.
I must be protected.
I am.
God's child.
I am
somebody.
Somebody.
What time is it? What time is it? What time is it? What time is it?
Excuse me. As I said, there is another group that is coming in, and we'd appreciate it very much if you could leave the building as soon as possible. Thank you.